He kōna ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Kia ora, ko Tuhi Moana Aupauri tōku ingoa, ko Hikurangi te maunga, ko Waiapu te awa, ko Ngāti Porou te iwi, kei Makarika mātou, te teihana o Makarika i tēnei rā, pātata atu ki te taone o Ruatoria, ahua te kaumārima meneti ki te tonga. My name is Tuhi Moana Aupauri, Hikurangi, Waiapu, and Ngāti Porou is my mountain, my awa, and my tribe. Today we are on Makarika Station, 15 minutes south of Ruatoria.
You know you're on the East Coast when you see three things: the ocean, marae after marae, and horses. For our photographer and videographer Fran, it's a whole new world compared to Te Waipounamu landscape she's used to. For me, it's a breath of fresh air seeing endless stretches of pristine beaches with far fewer footprints than back home in Mount Maunganui. And as we wind our way along State Highway 35 to visit Tuhi Moana, also known as Rore, we can't help but fall in love with Te Tai Rāwhiti. Kia ora, I'm Āpeish Taratua Rangikura. He uri no Ngāti Raukawa, Ngāti Rangi, Ngāpuhi me Ngāti Rārua. This is Far From Town, made by Shepherdess in RNZ. Stories of women at the end of windy gravel roads and up remote valleys across Aotearoa. We head out from Ruatoria towards Makarika Station, one of three farms managed by Ngāti Growth. That's the investment arm of Ngāti Porou. We get a sense of the community as we pass Rongohaere Marae and the wee local school. Arriving at the farm, we spot a big red wool shed where we're greeted by Rore and her 9-year-old daughter, Arihia. As the station manager, Rore, who is 34, runs a staff of two and another casual when they're busy on the roughly 900-hectare farm. It ranges from flats to rolling hills and rugged bush. Looking out beyond the house, you can see Hikurangi Maunga, and if you go higher up on the farm, you'll look down at the Mataa River. Though the mahi is hard, it is clear from the get-go that for Rore, farming, training her dogs, and riding on horseback isn't just a job, it's a whole lifestyle that she lives, breathes, and loves.
I was on a horse before I could walk. I used to go to work with my dad growing up, and I used to sit in his wet weather jacket. Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, so that's where I started, and then I was going to work with him on the back of his horse, and then, you know, I don't know if you know, but if you're sitting with your bum on the horse, on the back of the horse, and the sweat and stuff, you end up with blisters on your backside, so, yeah.
Yeah. You got
but that sort of didn't put me off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that made me want some more, I was hungry for it, yeah.
That's so cool. You must have had, like, a natural affinity to them then.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had a natural affinity for me because I don't think I'd be sitting here if I didn't enjoy riding horses. That's what got me here, yeah. You know, the closer I am to my horses, the more at home I feel.
In fact, she not only breeds, trains and works her horses, but she's also heavily involved in horse sports. And if you're not familiar with this term, it's something that the East Coast is well known for. Riders and horses compete to show off their skills across different disciplines from endurance to sprint races. It's not equestrian and it's not dressage, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, so we spend, 3, maybe 4 months in the summertime, nearly every weekend or every second weekend at least, travelling up and down the East Coast horse sports.
Yeah. That's so cool. What's the horse sports like the traction with that?
It's just a good whānau sport. Like, everyone's involved, from babies right up to the older guys, kaumātua. Yeah, and then it's just fun. Nice family event where everybody's involved. And, a lot of Māoris are doing it. You know, we've got all these show jumping equestrians, mea to mea happening down the ways. But, you know, we're quite remote here, so we've got to travel at least 2 hours to get to Gisborne. So we go up to Opotiki as well, so there's over 100 horses there. Yeah, and that's from all age groups, from the babies all the way up to the kaumātua papas. There's a few papas around there that give it to us.
Yep. Yeah.
Keep us honest. Oh, we got, you know, a few kids in town there that ride around, even just on dark. I'm like, bruh, come on, bro, go home now. But too dark to be riding around, might get hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, just for safety things, but, you know, they're all out there doing it. And man, they can make some good horses, I tell you that.
Arihia, that's Rore's 9-year-old daughter, she's home from school today, and you can tell that she's Rore's daughter. Confident, cheeky, and at home in the saddle.
Do you like riding horses, Arihia?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you have a your own horse?
Yeah, I have two.
What are their names?
Cruz and Jaws.
Do you name all of your pets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arihia was born in March 2016, and I've been solo since March 2017.
Wow.
So, yeah, 8 and a bit years of her life, I've been just been me. Oh, yep. And the help of whānau.
Even when Dore was pregnant, she didn't stop work. She did, however, stop riding her horse once she got to a certain point. Reluctantly, though.
I was still going to work. However, I didn't ride a horse, even though I wanted to, but, yeah, I just couldn't. I just couldn't bring myself to do that. However, I still went to work. I still mustered on my feet. So I got dropped off up the hill with my dogs and then mustered downhill.
All the way to term?
Yep. Even on my due date, I turned up to work, but then I realised, oh no, I can't do this, I need to go home. The next day I started coming, early stages of giving birth.
Alright, so she came the next day after her due date?
I started, getting... What do you call it?
Injections.
Yeah, all of that the day after, but then I didn't have it till the day after that.
Far out. And did you birth her at home?
Nah, so we had planned to just go down the road to Te Puia Hospital and, I had her there. It was nice, quiet. Well, it's only a small hospital and there was just only us in there. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I was fit and, and probably people say I was a little bit nuts, but I still did it. Yeah, still do what I had to do, and I think that's probably why she enjoys what I enjoy as well. Yeah, she was doing it before she was born.
When did you start riding horses?
When I was one.
Younger than that, mate. I think I first chucked you on a horse, you were 3 months old.
Holy moly. Yeah.
And then you done your first horse sports season, you weren't even 1 year old. Her papa made her a belt and I ended up clipping her to the saddle. It's probably not ideal, just in case the horse does something, so you're safer to eject. But I just didn't put her on a horse that'll do that. Yeah. When she got a little bit older, then I bought her one of those Kathmandu backpack things. So I was away back at work. I was taking sheep away, pushing her in a pram.
Yeah. That's so cool.
On grass?
No, on the road.
Did you have much support?
Good whānau support. And I went to work. I did try not to let it settle because then it gives my brain time to think. I just got up and just did me. And then she had to tag along, and then, no regrets. Yeah, we're still doing it. My parents and her dad's parents were around to help me as well, and my siblings, yep. They were, all of them, played a part in raising her.
I might not have put my boy on a horse at 3 months old, but I can definitely relate to the challenges of becoming a solo mum when bub is really young. Having to balance motherhood with work and making ends meet. It does always help having whānau nearby, though. And with her parents on a farm just up the road, and all three of her siblings still living locally, Dore manages to find her own way to do it, with Arihia coming along for the ride.
Did you grow up here?
Yeah, I was born and bred here. I went to school down here, same school for 13 years, Kura Kaupapa in Ruatoria. Te Waiu, she's attending it now. Yes, I spent 13 years there, and after that I spent a year down south in Balclutha. I went to farming school. Yeah, so I done a year there and then I come back home and started working.
Did you always want to farm?
Yeah. So even like on the weekends, you know, everyone tidies up their houses and stuff, I was gone. So I left my siblings and my mum, next minute they're wondering where I was. Yeah, I was gone and I'd come back just after lunch, just after everything still tidy. it was mean. You know, we didn't have much. We weren't rich in money, but we were rich in love, rich in, you know, everything. You just got to get out and make the most of what's there. You know, just because we're, you know, rural and there's, looks like there's nothing around, but there's heaps of things around. So you just go for a tutu and make do with, learn from your muck up, really. Yeah.
And your parents?
Oh, my parents just lived on the other side of the Waipu Bridge. You would have come past their house. Yep.
Are both your parents, do they both whakapapa Māori?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, they whakapapa back to here in Ngāti Porou.
Yep.
My mum's, you know, just from down here, and my dad's from out here, Porua.
And so your dad, did you say your dad was also...
Yeah, he's a farmer as well. His father was a farmer, so it's just, he pretty much passed down knowledge. But he got knocked back with cancer a couple of years ago in his throat. So he's got a trachea in at the moment. And his breathing's not too flash, but that's his way of life at the moment. So he's slowed right down. But we still get out there on the weekends when we're available and give him a hand.
What's it been like, you know, with your papa being ill? Have you guys had to adjust, and, you know, what's the adjustment been like for your mum?
Especially when he was doing hospital trips, you know, because it's... So he had to go to Hamilton. So me and my siblings, we're all taking turns to drive just because he's a coasty, outdoorsy type of guy. When he was doing his treatment, he didn't want to stay up there, so on a Friday, if one of us will go up and pick him up, bring him back for the weekend, and then shoot him back up on the Monday morning. Yes, I've got an older sister and two younger brothers, but I probably had a good connection with all of them. My sister left, she went to boarding school when she was 13, so from pretty much then on she sort of left the house, but she'd, you know, still come back. So the brother younger than me, we're only a year and 2 weeks apart, so we're pretty close growing up, you know, competing all the time. Even till now we still sort of compete. He races with us at the horse sports too, and yeah, we always neck to neck, him and I. Growing
up, pretty cool.
Yeah. But he used to be on the farm as well and, you know, do exactly the same as what I'm doing. He enjoyed that. But then he found another... Because where he was working with the old man, it was just him. I think he just needed a change. And he's enjoying what he's doing now. He's driving trucks. But he still hasn't left the farming side. He still comes back and has a jam at everything. Yeah. A few years ago, when my brother was still working on the farm, both of us were working for the old man. We were riding our sport horses on the hill, and his one had flipped off the bank and rolled on top of him, and he broke his leg. I was waiting for him to bring the cows around, and I was like, wow, what is he up to? Like, it doesn't take this long. So I turned around and I went back. I could hear him calling out to me, oh, I was like, what the hell's going on? So I rode up, I followed the voice. He was on the ground stretched out, and I was like, what happened? He was like, oh, da-da-da-da, horse flopped over, and I think my leg's broken, and I could see blood. I was like, wow. So, because I wasn't on a good horse as well, so I had to hop off, and I ran down the hill to because there's no service up there. So I had to use the landline to ring the emergency services, and they were going to send the ambulance. I was like, no, you can't do that. They can't get there. So, yeah, so we waited for about an hour for the chopper to fly from Gizzy. And then, yeah, we got him on a stretcher, threw him in the chopper. The Westpac chopper is just a phone call away. So, yeah, I think living up here, we rely on the chopper, like, yeah, pretty hard. Yeah, and we're thankful for the for them for helping us out. Yeah.
Yeah, but out here, where you're 2 hours from the nearest PGG Wrightson store, and you need to rely on a chopper when help's too far away, distance really does define daily life. But that doesn't diminish connection. In fact, it seems to be the case that across valleys and over paddocks, connection runs even deeper.
What are you up to?
I'm listening to you talk on your deck. What are you up to?
That's Kelly, Rory's nearest neighbour. Her house is about 100 metres away, and you can see it from Rory's back deck, where we spent a lot of time chatting this afternoon, not realising that we could be heard from Kelly's place. That's how quiet it is here.
Do you want to come up?
Oh, okay. I'll just tie my dogs up.
Bring those up too.
Bring all my dogs up here.
Oh, if you want to. Have you heard of the Shepherdess magazine?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, they're here.
Yeah, I have, because I told you to ring them, eh?
Yeah, so yeah, they told you to come up here. Oh, they want you to come up.
Oh, okay. All right, see you soon.
See you soon.
Kia ora.
Kelly arrives without the dogs. And though she was initially intimidated by the bikes, it wasn't long before we were spinning yarns about womanhood and really the way that women feel when they're raising children.
Yeah, otherwise you can keep quiet.
Lonely, bored.
Lonely, start eating your life.
Yeah.
Like, why did I agree to have a baby?
Yeah.
We have all
been
there.
Oh, holy yeah.
Shit. Yeah. No one told me about this.
About this.
Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, it's going to be the best thing you're ever going to do in your life. Well, wow.
Yep, cool.
Now can I have the real talk, please?
Yeah. And Mum's like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you about that. You need like, oh.
Do you know what? I think that it's something, you know how you get baby brain and you forget, like you look back at the days and you actually forget what it was like.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's how something scientific in our DNA that's done
just
that so that we
into
forget.
Your brain,
yeah.
You forget how hard it was.
And then you have more.
And you're like,
and then you're like, why?
Why did I do that again?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like my one was, he was a beast when he was born. And then before you know it, he wanted two boobs. Then he was going through growth spurts and I didn't have enough in there. And I'm like, he's trying to kill me. And then his dad's going, but breast is the best. And I'm like, I want to punch your face.
Because, your
like, he's trying to suck these things off. Yeah. And, like, I can't even touch them. And then it's like, oh, no.
You're going to... I'm not going to sell you the pretty picture. It's like, I love being a mum.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely love being a mum. But the change to your body, the impact on your life and everything.
Emotional, mental... Yep.
Physical,
your life in general,
spiritual.
Your priorities, is not about you.
Yep.
And sometimes you have to realise, choose you for a moment, and that's not being selfish.
Yep.
That's just like, shit, I have to be kind of good in my brain.
Yep.
And feeling good about myself to be good for my child.
Yep.
Things like that. And no one tells you that. There's so many more opportunities out there for women. Like, you know, I tell this one, like when I was 16 and all I wanted to do was be a farmer. There was nothing, no schools, that my farming schools where you could go away. And as a woman, no way was there a woman shearer. No way was there a woman presser, a woman in the dog trials. There was nothing. They're like, nah. And then Dad always said to me, go get a real job. And his idea of a real job for a woman was in an office. And I was like, and then, and then like seeing her come through and actually having to push doors open instead of like waiting for, even still, like, you know, she's about 10 years younger than me. It was still pretty impressive what she's been able to do. And just sort of, you know, like, yeah, watch me. Watch me and catch up. You know, pretty much, you know, it's almost like you have to. You have to be a special type of person to do that. And have good, awesome support around you too, you know, especially having a baby and still traveling through that journey.
Really?
Would you want to see more women on farm, like working, managing?
Yeah,
like?
Yeah. I reckon mentally women have a brain for it. Like, you know, when we think about how organised we have to be for life in general. And then also... because we can't work physically harder than a man, so we always try and think of like a...
Go for technique, or just
think smarter, not harder, that kind of
strategy.
Mentality. Yeah, like, you know, oh shit, we can't physically lift this buggy out of the drain, so how are we going to do this?
Speaking of perceptions, when we rocked up to the station, there was a dude at the stable who I'd assumed was either Dore's partner or brother. Turns out it was neither. Dore has been in her role as station manager at Makarika for just over a year now. And as a young Māori wahine, that's a pretty rare position, as Kelly alluded to. The tāne was actually one of her two staff members, and we don't see much of them, as it seems they're making sure they have plenty to do out on the farm to avoid the mics. I don't know if that's a farmer thing or a coasty thing, but I'm certainly noticing a mic avoidance trend across most of our episodes.
So I work for our iwi farm, Ngāti Porou, for Ngāti Growth Pākehā Farms, but this place is called Makarika Station. Well, at the time I had finished working full-time on Pākehā to go down and... So my dad was the neighbouring farm. He needed help, so I went down there and I helped him. And then the manager on this farm left, so there was a vacancy. And then, because I still worked well with the farm manager up at Pākehā, and he encouraged me to apply for the job. Yeah, no CV. I don't have a CV. So I just chucked my name down, and yeah, we're here now.
Far out. Are there many Māori station managers around here?
There's a handful, but they're all male, yeah.
Are there many female?
Not farm managers, not that I know of. Oh, I know if there's one of my mates in Tiki Tiki. She's on Hereumu. Yeah, a couple of other mates that work on farm, but yeah, they're not at the manager level just yet.
How does that feel? Like, yeah, knowing that you're the only woman or female farm manager.
Yeah, I suppose that's a result of, you know, working hard, setting goals, small goals, and achieving those. And then the goal becomes bigger and bigger, and then, yeah, I'm pretty much where I wanted to be, yeah.
Did you always want to be a station manager?
Yeah. It was sort of a leap into the deep end. You know, previously before this job, I was the one getting orders of, you know, go and do this, go and do that. But then when I come here, I was, oh, jingus, I don't have to do as much work, but I can get someone else to do it. So I had to learn how to give orders out to people because I don't like telling people what to do. It's not in my nature. Like, I'm sort of a do-it person, and someone learns off what I'm doing. Yeah, and trying to manage a farm, and, you know, it's a business, so I've got to make money for it and you know, be a mother at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've got to try and catch a break when I can. Might be on the weekends, not highly. It doesn't always work out like that, but, yeah, I do find time, you know, to balance everything else. But if it's not balanced out, then something's got to give. Something's got to suffer, and I don't want that to happen, so I just, you know, take time and, rely on my workers to cover that farm bit for me. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll pretty much go up by that tank. You'll get good views up there.
So it's like beef and sheep. How many, sheep and cows do you reckon you'd have?
I've got I'm running about, say... 2,200 ewes and they're all sort of starting to lamb now. This is our year what we've planned, and I've got about 170 odd in calf cows, but I also do a lot of fattening, finishing stock over the summer months.
So what's a day look like for you? Like, what time of the day do you start?
In the summertime I could start 4:30 in the morning, easy, and then I sort of work up till when it gets hot, because you know you gotta care for your dogs and everything. They can get heat exhaustion and just pretty much drop. So you gotta even for the sheep and the cattle, they can get, you know, it's just too hot for anybody. And then we'll resume again in the evening, finish off and just go to dark. That's the safest way to do it.
Yeah.
And then in the winter time, because it gets a bit cold, we might just do the office hours from 8 or 9 o'clock and then knock off about 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
There's no separation between work and leisure for Rere. Her work days are often spent on horseback, and so is her downtime, whether it's riding on the farm, competing in horse sports, or even breeding horses. It's all about horses.
I do breed horses. It started off with my dad. He realised that we had a thing for horses. We loved horses, the connection. So, he had some mares, and then... he started breeding them. Got a couple of quarter horse stallions, so we crossed our horses with quarter horse. Because we enjoyed racing, doing the horse, sort of like barrel racing, like the rodeos type of buzz. So that's the sort of racing we do. And we just had to get a bit of spark in what we had, and the quarter horse did it for us. First cross, however, for the mahi side of things, they're a little bit soft for that, but because we've crossed them over with our station or heartier mares, you know, they can sort of just cut the mustard. But sport-wise, no, they're all right. You know, I've got a couple of young ones. They're yearlings, so they're only sort of a year old, up-and-coming mahi horse, sport horse, whatever, anything really. And I just keep my four that's handy. They're like my go-tos. I think I'd, literally rely on them, put my life on them.
How many dogs do you guys have?
I've got 8 working dogs and a little house mutt.
Do you guys breed or just...
Oh, we tried breeding, but we breed a lot of duds. So we sort of stopped. Yeah. Sort of wheel and deal with mates to get some working dogs. Just because you got a good dog or two doesn't mean you're going to get a good pup or two. As I said, I don't think I'd be sitting here if it wasn't for my horses and my dogs. They help me enjoy life and do what I love doing.
Get in Thor.
Arihia has a knack for quirky pet names. The name of the house mutt, that's what Rere calls their new Jack Russell, is Peaches. That, of course, gets the song from Mario Brothers movie stuck in my head all day. You know, Peaches, 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 I love you. Oh my God, sorry, that was terrible. But anyway, Rere had prepped a couple of horses for us that morning so we could go for a ride. Cruz and Jaws, Arihia's smaller ponies, weren't ready to go, so of all days, Rere decided it was time Arihia tried out a bigger hoihoi for size. Fran and I go ahead and watch them make their way up the windy hills with literally all her dogs in tow. I kind of feel like I'm watching my idea of a real-life superhero. The way she keeps her dogs tucked in line with the horses, guides her daughter to stay calm on this massive horse, and ride her own like it required no skill at all, I'm genuinely mesmerised. Rere is incredibly humble, but in my opinion, she's an absolute badass with this energy of being completely zen, but undoubtedly in charge. It was an extension of her. Didn't seem like hard work, even though it would have been. She's just doing what she does day in, day out, and that to me is an inspiring life.
We come up for a ride up to the airstrip today to suss some views out.
me and my girl thought it was a nice, beautiful day to come for a ride on a horse, bring the dogs for a stretch and check out some ewes as we just started lambing.
And how often would you get up this? Is this like kind of the top of the farm?
Oh no, we go up a bit further right up to the pines up there, and then we got a couple of faces. Yeah, it sort of backs on to the mata as well, so it sort of just wraps around the back of the farm. You know, I used to work on the Pākehā station. I was shepherding up there, and I was literally mustering on my mōinga's toes, you know, gathering stock, taking them back home, but I was literally up right under it, yeah, right at the base.
You know, I mean, obviously dogs and everything else, but, like, what do you ever find yourself coming up and just finding peace out here? What's that like for you?
Yeah, no, every day I ride to work, it's just peaceful. It just, you know, you... I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but you like you shut everything out and it's just you, your horse, your dogs and nature. So, you know, yep, you're thinking about how wonderful it is, you know. I can't ask for a better office, really.
Ruby!
Riding the horse back down to the house with Rode, talking about the community, the whenua and her day-to-day, I honestly just want to call my whānau and say, hey, I'm not coming home. I want to be adopted out as a Ngāti girl. And even better, come join me in Ruatoria. There was just something in the very down-to-earth, rugged, real, and hard-working lives that they lead that really speaks to me. I think it's easy as a passerby, driving along a road surrounded by farms and trees, to assume that there's not a lot happening. But that couldn't be further from the truth. Spending the day with Rore, Kelly, and Arihia, I see just how full their lives are in these remote places. And actually, even though there are far less people, and it might seem quite isolating, coming together, connecting, and gathering as a community is incredibly integral to their survival. And unlike us townies, where we have to go out of our way to get genuine peace and quiet, for Rore, that peace and quiet is right here on her farm, on the back of her horse, at the top of the hills, with her dogs and her daughter right beside her.
You know, I don't have to answer to anybody. You know, when she was younger, you know, it was just get up, let's go and get in the truck, we're going to do horse. And then now, which she does, it doesn't even worry her, she just comes. She's keen.
It's just her norm.
Yeah, she doesn't know anything else, really. But at least she can't change that herself when she gets a bit older. She doesn't have to do it. But at least she can say she's a Ngāti girl and she can ride a horse.
Yep.
What does it mean for you bringing up Arihia here?
It means everything. You know, she's walking on the land her ancestors once walked on. You know, we're always outside. Not everyone's made to sit inside counting and whatever they do in the classroom. I know I didn't enjoy it, but I had to do it to get to where I am today. So I'm grateful for that. That's a special feeling, really. It's hard to explain, but I just take it in, and you know, it always sits in the front of my head, my brain, that, you know, my tīpuna walked this whenua, and I'm walking it now, and so is my daughter. I'm happy. I'm bringing my girl up here. I've got everything. I've got everything I need. I've got everything I enjoy. Just being outside, even in the rain, like you'd find me out there rolling around in the mud, or yeah, riding my horse. That's where I'll be.
Thanks for listening to Far From Town, a podcast series from the team at RNZ and Shepherdess. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you're following the series in your favourite podcast app to hear more stories of women living at the end of windy gravel roads and up remote valleys across Aotearoa. A heartfelt thank you to Rore and Arihia Opodi, who welcomed us in, shared so openly and gave so generously of their time. It was a privilege to sit at your table and hear your story. I'm your host, Āpej Tarato Rangikura. He uri no Ngāti Raukawa, Ngāti Rangi, Ngāpuhi me Ngāti Rārua. Presenter, writer and producer for the series. Francine Bord captured photos and video along the way. You can see these on the webpage for this series. Felicity Connell is our researcher and production assistant, and Christy McGregor is the series producer. The series was engineered by the RNZ operations team. Justin Gregory is the executive producer for the series, and Brianna Juratich-Gregg is the production coordinator. Thanks to Janina Schwanecker for all the great advice and guidance on the series. Tim Watkin is the executive editor, audio. You can find more of RNZ's great podcasts on the RNZ website, rnz.co.nz/podcast. Have a listen.